the story so far. In the first part of the prologue, we jump back some 300 years to the brave men, women, and children who came from England to find a new life. Their passage is both arduous and tragic, and marked with death, as some of those who embarked on the journey would not make it to see the end. Once on land, the remaining would-be settlers departed in a wagon train to find the parcel they had purchased, a place they longed to call home. But as they draw closer, two more men mysteriously vanish. Leading a search party to find them is the group's patriarch, William Lawton, and three other men. What they find are the grisly remains of one man and evidence there are things in the woods that are quite deadly indeed. There is one person, however, who believes another force is at work here. William's eldest son, Thomas, tells his younger brother, Miles, that while on board the ship, he saw their father push a woman overboard in the dead of the night. Miles doesn't believe him, but then wonders why Thomas would say such a terrible thing. Then, as he lay there sleeping, Miles is awoken by his father, who whispers to him, "Listen to every word I tell you, and don't make a sound, or you will perish tonight like the others." Prologue, Part 2. Miles was so struck with fear that he couldn't even blink. The boy nodded as his father continued to whisper to him. What was being said seemed impossible, but this was his father speaking. Miles looked over toward his brother, but Thomas was fast asleep. As far as he could tell, his mother and baby sister Allison were inside the wagon as usual, in perfect slumber. There was nobody watching them. Miles thought of what Thomas had told him, the story of his father tossing the woman overboard, back on the boat. He refused to believe it at the time, but the things his father was telling him now, well, they amounted to murder.
"Please, Miles, you must trust me," William said. "There are lives in great peril. You must get dressed now. I will explain more as we walk."
Miles wanted to scream to warn the others. His father had become, at what point he wasn't sure, a complete and raving lunatic. It was his father's hand on his shoulder, the hand of a disciplinarian, that prevented him from doing so. If he screamed, he was sure this man would kill him as well. In the dark, he slipped on his clothes, hoping, praying, that his brother would wake up and see him. But Thomas lay still.
"We must go. Hurry,"
his father whispered. And under the cloak of night, with only the sounds of the valley and woods around them, Miles and William Lawton crept off into the darkness. At the edge of camp, Miles turned to look back at his brother. It would be the last time he would see Thomas as he remembered him. Miles decided that once in the woods, he would flee from his father under the cover of darkness, but as they ventured further down the trail, he became aware of sounds coming from the woods and the brush around them. Noises, scurrying, breathing. Footsteps padding just outside of the arc of firelight from the torch his father carried. The journey the past couple of weeks, sleeping outside, had rendered his ears accustomed to the noises of the great outdoors, especially those after sundown. Crickets, owls, the occasional bump in the night. But this was different. With every step, the noises grew louder, a symphony of movement unseen. Until the sound grew so great that Miles thought he would surely go mad. In the darkness ahead, Miles would see small glints of light appearing briefly and then disappearing. "'Tis nothing but fireflies," he thought, but part of him knew better. The glints in the darkness always appeared in horizontal pairs. They were eyes. Eyes staring back at him, watching him, sizing him up from somewhere in the dark. "Run," his brain commanded him, finally breaking through to his conscious mind. He pulled away from his father, about to bolt, when the old man's hand wrapped around the back of his neck, his father's rough skin feeling hot as flame against his soft, bare flesh.
"Don't pull away from me," his father hissed. You do not want track of what is beyond this path.
Miles's eyes fell upon the pistol stuck through his father's belt. William took his hand off the boy's neck and put it back on the butt of the gun, as if ready to draw. Miles fell back into step. He dared not disobey. If there was a chance to escape the clutches of his father, this was not it, especially not with the gun at his old man's side. He would wait, and when the time came, he would run, as if being chased by lightning. They walked down the path for what seemed like ages, until coming to another clearing. Up ahead in the rim of dim light from his father's torch, Miles could see something. It looked like a hand.
"Do not look," his father said. It was impossible. Given the choice of looking out at the eyeballs glinting in the darkness or ahead on the path,
Miles decided on the latter.
As they got closer, Miles gasped.
William attempted to shield him, but there was no keeping the boy from seeing the man torn in half, the same man he himself had found earlier.
William clamped his hand over the boy's mouth. "Do not scream," he whispered. "If you must look, do not scream."
The man, who Miles had remembered from the months they had all spent in close quarters together, did not resemble a human being anymore, for his body had been mostly stripped of skin and flesh. From the man's face came the grimace of bone and teeth.
"Animals," William said, preempting Miles's obvious question. "By tomorrow there will be hardly anything left of him."
Did we come to bury him?"
Miles blurted out.
"No," his father said, and from the inside of his frock coat, he drew a dagger.
Miles's breath caught in his throat. He saw the blade and froze, expecting the next moment to be his last.
"He's going to kill me," Miles thought, but instead of turning the blade on him, William crouched next to the dead man and cut a small lock of hair from what was left on his head.
"Hold this and follow me,"
William said, handing Miles the torch. Carefully, he followed his father to the bramble a few feet away. And that's where he saw it. Another man, naked, curled up on the ground, and judging from the fact that half his head was missing, very dead.
"Animals didn't do this," Miles whispered.
"No," William responded, crouching down next to the body of the naked man. "I did."
A chill ran down Miles' spine.
"This man attacked us earlier," William said. "I had no choice."
Miles looked down.
He was one of us."
"Was, not any longer," William told him.
"He had turned. I'm positive he killed the other man."
I don't believe you,"
Miles said, stunned. That he just said these words to his father shocked even himself.
"Please, Miles, I don't expect you to understand quite yet."
His father cut a lock from the body of the naked man as well.
"Bring the torch over here."
Miles did as told. He dared not disobey, as long as his father still had that pistol. As his eyes adjusted to the dim arc of light, William paced a circle once, and then drew it in the dirt with the dagger a second time through. From there, he drew several lines, crossing and connecting. Miles had seen this before back home, but was always told by his mother he was too young to know of such things.
"It's a pentagram," William said, wiping the sweat from his brow. "Back home, we were persecuted for our beliefs, shunned, ridiculed, even murdered. This is why we came to the New World, Miles, to find a better place where we are free to practice our religion as we see fit."
William positioned Miles in the middle of the pentagram.
"Be still," he told the boy, "and watch."
His father began circling the pentagram.
"Some dare call us pagans, heretics, worshippers of darkness. Let them.
From whence we came, it is the self-proclaimed duty of the self-righteous to judge us based upon the fact that our beliefs do not match theirs. We have chosen the master we wish to worship, and it is he who has delivered us to this place. A place of our destiny, but it is obvious before we are to claim that which is ours. We will be tested first, tested by the obstacles others chose to put in our path to challenge our faith. Tested by people who dare stand in our way. Like that one-eyed hoodlum who wanted to hold us up for more money and tried to scare us with tales of spooks and spirits. It was I, however, who had the last laugh on him, though. He will not be extorting monies from gullible travelers anymore. I made sure of that.
Miles swallowed hard. He thought of the woman going overboard. He thought of the man laying dead, with half his skull blown off. For years, Miles, I have had visions of this place. Visions of what we will find here, and before my very eyes. These visions have been true. Every last one of them.
A sound started in William's throat, coming first as a low whisper, and then turning into a low growl. The chant coming from his mouth, words and phrases in a language Miles had never heard before. A language so guttural and primitive, yet at the same time hypnotic. Williams's arms drew back and forth in a way that reminded Miles of the conductor of a small orchestra he had seen back in Portsmouth. Back then, the conductor had been summoning music from the musicians. Here, his father was summoning, but what was anybody's guess? As the chanting grew louder and more intense, Miles looked up, and where his father's eyes once were now shocks of white. Miles couldn't scream. He couldn't move. It felt as if bands of iron had wrapped around his body. The terror inside him swelling to the point where he felt as if his sanity were being torn asunder from his very body. William reached out and grabbed Miles' wrist with one hand, raising the dagger in the other. And with one quick stroke, he sliced clean across the boy's palm. Then clutching it inside his own hand, balled them both into a fist and squeezed. Miles felt as if the bones in his hand would shatter, being crushed inside his father's. But instead, blood poured out onto the ground, as if he were squeezing an orange. The blood, which pooled at Miles' feet, quickly disappeared into the ground as if being sucked down like water into a drain. And as quickly as it started, William dropped Miles' hand and it was over. The invisible bands holding Miles in place were gone, and the boy, drained physically from the ritual, fell to the ground at his father's feet. Catching his own breath, William said, "You are ready to do that which needs to be done." In silence, they waited for sunrise to come, William mouthing some kind of unholy prayer to himself, and Miles too scared to even move. It felt as if something were sitting next to him, but any time he'd look, there was nothing. It was a presence he could feel but not see. And to Miles, there was something oddly comforting, because he did not know anymore who his father was, though this presence next to him felt oddly familiar. At some point during the night, exhaustion overwhelmed Miles, and sleep enveloped him. It was his father who once again shook him awake. "Time to go," William said. He didn't even wait for Miles to get up before starting off down the path back towards camp. Miles bolted to his feet, his limbs stiff from the way he had been sitting. He glanced down at his hands, looking for the deep cut his father had put there with the dagger. But it was nowhere to be seen. His eyes darted from one hand to the other, nothing. So certain he had been of the gash. His father squeezing his closed fist like...
"Miles, please hurry!" his father called out.
Miles tried to remember what had indeed happened last night, but the memory seemed foggy. He recalled what Thomas had said about how the things he'd seen on the boat were evaporating from his mind like morning dew. Miles turned back to look at the spot where they had been, and that's when he saw it. In the woods, through all the bramble and thicket, were eyes. Hundreds and hundreds of eyes staring back at him from hiding. and those eyes seemed hungry.
It is impossible, Miles whispered to himself. But when he turned back, the eyes were still there, watching him.
Miles picked up the pace of his feet until he had caught up with his father, grasping William's hand for comfort. As they approached camp, Miles could see the clearing up ahead through the trees. The wagons were still circled in the same way they had always made camp. Miles wanted to run toward them, to his mother, brother, and baby sister.
Wait, his father said. There's one thing I must tell you before we go back.
Miles waited in anticipation. The evening had been long enough. He just wanted to be back at camp.
You could say part of my vision for this new land and our future was drawn in blood, William said.
Miles's heart beat faster. He didn't like the sound of this.
We live in a time of great peril, William began. War, pestilence, greed. We're at the verge of a great reckoning. Just because we walk on this ground now does not mean we always shall, for I have foreseen this with mine own mind's eye. The evil of man, persecution, genocide, has pushed this world to the brink of Armageddon. The end of days will soon be upon us.
Miles began shaking. His father had long ago abandoned the pulpit of the church in which he had been a pastor. Miles had been 3 years old at the time and had barely a recollection of it. Though at night, in secret, Thomas would talk, on occasion, about how their father had lost his faith, claiming he had seen the truth about his beliefs. Miles was beginning to think that these visions he was just learning about consisted of what his father claimed to be the truth. He had become aware of the strange rituals he would sometimes secretly hear his mother and father performing late in the evening, but chose to believe they were just things he was too young to understand. He thought of the secret moans and sounds coming from his parents' room at night that he would often cover his ears not to hear.
I did this for us, Miles, his father said. I brought us here to be with him, to serve at his right hand when the day of reckoning arrives, for this is the place from where he will emerge to reclaim the throne he was denied.
Miles closed his eyes. In his mind was an image from an old church primer of his youth, a book that had been long banished from their house. The image, a horned beast trapped in a pit of flame, seemed to burn itself into Miles' mind.
I brought him the sacrifice he wanted, Miles. I brought it to him all the way here.
His father turned his head and gestured toward the clearing, toward the camp. Pulling away from his father, Miles bolted down the path.
Miles, come back here!
William shouted.
You're not going to like what you find!
Miles ran as fast as his legs would carry him, his feet pumping against the hard dirt. His lungs burned, but he kept running, finally breaking free into the clearing. His heart felt like it was going to explode, but he kept moving toward the wagons.
Thomas! He called out, gasping for breath. Thomas! Mother!
It was then that he saw the bodies. Two of them on the ground, their limbs sprawled at unnatural angles. Miles approached, slowly, his whole body shaken. The man and woman on the ground had been torn apart by something, their bodies seemingly thrown to the ground as if they were nothing but rag dolls. Her clothing had been ripped apart, her skirt mercifully dragged up over her face. The man next to her had no face to speak of, for the flesh had been torn off it, his skeletal jaw hanging open in a never-ending silent scream. Miles turned.
Thomas! He yelled. Mother!
No sound greeted him in return. He turned past the first wagon and looked inside. The flies had begun to light already on the dead woman, landing on the bloody gash alongside her cheek. In her arms, she clutched what appeared to be a bundle wrapped in a blanket. Miles remembered these two as the woman who had given birth in their hometown just 2 months before they boarded the Majestic. Miles ran to the next wagon. He didn't have to look inside to know what had happened. Dripping from between the wooden slats of the undercarriage was blood. He took 2 steps and found another man laying face down, his legs severed above the knee, exposing denuded bone. Miles knew without question, those legs had been chewed off. And then behind him, he heard a sound. He spun to find the 3 coyotes gnawing the flesh off another dead body on the ground, just under the next wagon. The scavengers were oblivious to Miles as he approached, and when one of the coyotes looked up, exposing its victim, that's when Miles saw it. Thomas's face. Or, more accurately, what was left of it.
No! Miles screamed, no!
He ran toward the coyote, shrieking and waving his arms like a wild man to shoo them away. The beast looked up and scattered, disappearing into the woods at full gallop. Miles fell to his knees next to his dead brother.
Thomas! Thomas!
He grabbed his brother's limp arm, the shirt torn and soaked with blood. At the end was a gnarled stump where Thomas's hand had been chewed away. The tears exploded from Miles as he clutched Thomas's body to his, crying into the sky, sobbing hard to the point where he was no longer making any sounds, just deep, hitching breaths.
I'm sorry, Miles. 'Tis the sacrifice we must make, William's voice came from behind them.
Miles squeezed his eyes shut and held his brother's lifeless body closer.
Miles, William said, reaching out to him. But Miles pulled away, leaping to his feet, dropping Thomas's body. Please, boy!
Miles backed away from his father's reach. He bumped into a wagon. Behind him, he heard a thud, and a hand fell upon his shoulder. His head shot around to find the outstretched arm of his mother, barely recognizable, with her lower jaw having been torn away. The rest of her face, frozen, in a grimace of agony. Still clutched to his mother's breast was baby Allison. A cry bursting from her tiny lungs.
She's alive,
Miles said, relief washing over him.
She's alive.
He reached for her, but his father grabbed him from behind and spun him around.
Please understand, Miles.
You did this,
Miles sobbed.
You killed them all.
No. It was not my hand.
But you knew! You brought us here to be slaughtered!
Baby Allison's cries cut through the air. Miles wanted to grab her and run, but his father's hands clutched his shoulders. It was then Miles heard someone else sobbing from an adjacent wagon. A girl's voice, most likely the 12-year-old daughter of fellow travelers whom Miles had barely spoken to during the entire journey.
There are others still alive. We must help them,
Miles pleaded. William reached down to the pistol by his side, drawing it from his belt.
In this world, Miles, we are the persecuted. In the next, we will be the ones with his power. His time is coming, and when that day is upon us, it will change everything. We will rule by his side.
Whose side?
Miles asked. William looked directly into his eyes and said,
The coyote.
William stepped back from Miles.
I have known for a very long time of our family's legacy and have tried to deny it, even trying to find refuge in God, but the truth cannot be hidden any longer. What God created is not worthy. Their time is past. It's time for the darkness to return to this world.
William raised the gun. Miles wanted to run, but couldn't.
Close your eyes, Miles.
No.
Then keep them open.
His father thumbed back the hammer on the pistol.
Miles' voice trembled.
You're the coyote?
No, my boy, William said, a serene smile crossing his face. And that's when Miles could feel the pain in his hand. He looked down, and the gash his father had sliced with the dagger split open once again and began to bleed. And as the blood poured from the wound, Miles could see a light inside, growing from a point into a glowing ball. The vision came to Miles, endless images flashing by his eyes, as if time were rocketing past while he was standing still. There was flame and smoke, an earth scorched, the sky opening, a battle of darkness and light.
I'm not the coyote, William said, as he pressed the barrel to his own temple.
You are, and you will be victorious.
And with a steady hand, he pulled the trigger. Coming up next, Chapter 1, where we move ahead 150 years and meet the stranger. Questions, comments, send them to me at shadowfalls@podshowla.com. And big thanks to Black Lab for the Badlands theme song, That Night, from the album Passion Leaves a Trace. And you can find more of Black Lab at blacklabworld.com. This is Mark Yoshimoto Nemkov, Fading to Black.
There are things I have done. There's a place I have gone. There's a beast and I let it run. Now it's running. You can't forget. There's a gift that you sent. You sent it my way. So take this night, wrap it around me like a sheet. I know not forgiven, but I need a place to sleep. So take this night and lay me down on the street. I know I'm not forgiven, but I hope that I'll be given some peace. There's a game.